Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 139. Let's get into the news. Not a whole lot going on this week. We have some great new pieces going up on the Midnight Freemasons. I went ahead and joined the Masonic Society so that we can use that as a reference for articles for the show. Hopefully that proves to be a great source of good topics. There are some really cool events happening very soon. Friday, Saturday, the 18th and 19th of April, I will be at the Spring Reunion at the Valley of St. Louis, Scottish Rite, along with Brother James E. Fry of the Midnight Freemasons, as well as another good friend of mine, Brother Eric. So perhaps I will see you there. The following week is the Masonic Symposium at Pleiades Lodge in Westchester, Illinois, where there will be a ton of speakers, including Robert Hurd, Charles Harper, Anthony Mongelli, and also Brother Omar Ali. He'll be having a keynote as well. So I will be there, but I won't be presenting. I will be with two of my good friends that day, two fellow Midnight Freemasons, Brother Rob Walk Jr., and of course, Brother Brian Shimian. I hope you guys come out and see this great presentation. Tickets, I believe, are $25. There may be a few left. Information can be found where to get the tickets. I'll put that info in the show notes. The week after that is the first Saturday in May, and there will be a joint effort between the Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Illinois and the Grand Lodge of Illinois for the Masonic Cornerstone Laying at the Advocate Masonic Medical Center in Chicago. So we'll be doing that, and that'll be full Masonic regalia. And then I think we're just going to hang out in the city for a little while, and toward the evening, we are going to a Masters and Wardens dinner at the Medina Shrine Club. I'm not a Shriner. You don't have to be for this particular event. It is a Masters and Wardens dinner reception, basically, for the Grand Master State of Illinois. So we'll be going to both those events in that same day. So if you're at either one of those, I'll see you there. If you see me, come say hi. It'll be awesome. The last event that I'd like to talk to you about is the Dyslexia Center for the Metropolitan Chicago area. We're doing a walk, which is happening in Bloomingdale, Illinois, at the Valley of Chicago Scottish Rite Cathedral. All proceeds are going directly to the center, and it's sure to be an awesome day. They're going to get an early start. There's awards and all kinds of good stuff going on that day. It's going to be Saturday, May 31st. And you can find out even more on how to join the walk, volunteer, or donate via the website. Or even if you want a corporate sponsor, you go to www.walkfordyslexia.org. So please check that out. So the first piece that I have for you is an interesting one. I actually pulled it from a publication called Masonry in Manitoba. It's dated April of 2010, volume 67, number 8. And this article is entitled Freemasonry and the Third Reich. From time to time, we see anti-Masons attempting to prove that Freemasonry is wrong because Adolf Hitler and his henchmen were fascinated by it. Freemasons have for centuries suffered prosecution because of their membership in the fraternity. Hitler's Germany was its ultimate indignity. While those of the Jewish faith endured the greatest loss of life in humanity, many descriptions of the Holocaust refer to Jews, Gypsies, Freemasons, and others being consigned to the dreaded concentration camps and gas chambers. From 1931, Reinhard Heydrich, head of the Munich Police Political Department, appointed by his position by SS leader Heinrich Himmler, who was president of the Munich Police and political police commander of Bavaria, had been responsible for creating an SS counterintelligence service. The following year, he and Himmler redefined this as an ideological research intelligence agency called the Secret Service, or SD. As Himmler moved into positions of greater power, the SD moved from the theoretical into the area of covert external operations, including the Night of Long Knives. Author Michael Berlay notes in his major work, The Third Reich, a new history that the SD created surrogate public opinion, and that a 1938 report included what became routine surveys of Freemasonry whose essentially benign activities have always been a bugbear to the paranoid left and right. It began with a disarming flourish of erudition outlining the various lodges and national traditions. Organized Freemasonry had been smashed because of its Enlightenment legacy of humanity, tolerance, and liberalism, and because it was a vehicle for promoting Jewish ideas and objectives, a direct quote. Berlay continues, Freemasons were allegedly active in the party of Reichsbach and the German railways. Worse, low-level Masons granted an amnesty by the Führer were abusing his magnanimity to reorganize. Although some appeared to conform to the new dispensation, their almost total rejection of the measures taken against the Jews attributed to their philanthropic training and outlook was sinister. So were the wider connections. Former Freemasons had many social relations with Jews, operational church circles, and reactionary associations, so that cross connections of personal nature exist, which have been consolidated by the ideological affinity of both enemy groups. A museum in Nuremberg was helping to counteract the view that the apron and trowel crowd were pretty innocuous. The SD also had its eyes on international Freemasonry, learnedly unraveling obscure doctrinal rows between the English and French Masons, the progress of Masonry in Brazil and Uruguay, and its repression in Hungary, Ireland, and Poland. It was worrying that most of the French cabinet were Masons, not to speak of Roosevelt or the Earl of Harewood. The anti-Nazi activities of the American Masons warranted detailed attention. Later, Burleigh speaks of occupation and collaboration in Europe and notes, quote, "Freemasons were feared by right-wing clerical France as an occultic force with sinister international English and Jewish connections. The name Rothschild served multiple functions here, and as a corrupt nexus for radical businessmen, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and 25 of the 35 members of Leon Blum's Popular Front government. In reality, the Freemasons were a more modest lot. Liberal, anti-clericalism, and a dose of rationalist mumbo-jumbo went hand in hand with conviviality, philanthropy, and an old pals network. The director of the Bibliothèque Nationale, Bernard Fay, was appointed delegate of the French government to liquidate Masonic lodges with a separate registry of France's 50,000 Freemasons. The Exposition Masonique was opened at the Petit Palais, attracting over 1 million visitors in Paris, and when it toured the provinces, came to gawk at aprons and triangles and the revealed names of those who really ran things. The U.S. Holocaust Museum has a devoted section to the Nazi persecution of Freemasonry. Those visiting the museum's permanent exhibition will find in, quote, "Technology and Persecution, how the Nazis compiled and used information on their quote-unquote enemies." This segment text states, "All governments gather information about their citizens. The Nazi regime, however, used such information to track political opponents, enforce racial policies, and ultimately implement mass murder. As early as 1934, various government bureaus began to compile card catalogs identifying political and racial enemies of the regime, such as Freemasons, Jews, Gypsies, and genetically diseased persons." On the same floor of the museum, another segment entitled Enemies of the State uses text, artifacts, and photographs to discuss the Nazi pre-war persecution of political opponents, Roma and Sinti, homosexuals, and Masons. Here, visitors learn about Nazi views on Freemasonry and about the Nazi belief in a quote-unquote Jewish Masonic conspiracy, which, it asserted, planned to take over the world. In order to illustrate these fears, a film monitor shows photographs of anti-Masonic exhibition that was organized by the Nazis. In a number of popular public exhibitions, the Nazis created mock lodge rooms complete with skeletons of lodge officers. The Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdiction has published an interesting article about the museum's display about Freemasonry. It's certainly worth reading. Other examples abound. The claim that Freemasonry and Hitler are intertwined is not wholly inaccurate. Masons suffered from his mass atrocities, as did others. The book citations are from The Third Reich, A New History, by Michael Burleigh, Hill and Wang, New York, in 2000. ISBN number 08090032-51. All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that piece. The next thing I want to do is The Famous Freemason. It's going to be a little bit shorter of an episode this week. I'm going to have a couple short episodes because of the trip that we're making down to St. Louis. But I want to say thanks before I get into that for all of the support everyone has given to the show, whether you have bought the apps or donated or any other ways that we keep the show going. If you want to help us out, please visit www.wcypodcast.com and you can click on the support the show links. And remember, if you do some shopping with onnit.com or freemasonryart.com, use the coupon code WCY and you'll get 10% off of your order. And they send a little bit back to us to help keep the lights on. Again, there's PayPal donations, which are amazing because it allows you to donate whatever amount you want. There's no preset amounts. And I just have to say thanks to a lot of guys who've been sending in donations recently. The help is so appreciated. I can't begin to thank you enough. So this week, our famous Freemason is Turkey Creek Jack Johnson, born around 1852, passed away around 1887, and he was actually one of Wyatt Earp's posse men during his Vendetta ride, which is when he was making the rounds, and they've made movies about it, right? So Jack Johnson was thought to be a former bookkeeper and lawyer coming from Missouri. Now, Wyatt Earp believed that Johnson's real name was John Blunt, but there's no evidence to support this, and Blunt was not a gunman. And it is known that in 1881, he was 34 years of age. He and his brothers are alleged to have fled Missouri after being involved in a violent street clash in the mining town of Webb City, Missouri. His supposed brother, Bud Blunt, a known drunkard who had killed a man in Tip Top, Arizona in 1881, was sent to Yuma Prison. Johnson was not actually a gunman, quote-unquote, right? In the traditional sense, as most history books will tell you that he was, it's inaccurately portrayed in most books and movies. Wyatt Earp claimed to use him as an informer on the cowboys. Johnson supposedly spent some time in Deadwood in the Dakota Territory in 1876. He is said to have participated in a gunfight in 1876 where he calmly and slowly used two pistol shots to kill two men at a distance of 30 yards after allegations of cheating were charged following a game of poker. They were both trying to kill him with multiple pistol shots. Their mistake was trying to use a quick draw while moving toward Johnson. Their spray of shots went wild. Johnson simply turned sideways to make himself a smaller target, raised his opposite arm to use as a gun rest, and took a bead on each man, killing them with one shot apiece. It is debated as to whether this actually occurred, but town historians and modern-day event enactors stated publicly in August of 2013 that there were not one, but two separate stories published about this gunfight in the Deadwood Town newspaper in the days following its occurrence. There was also a record of a marshal named Jack Johnson who killed a desperado named Mike Fitzgerald in a gunfight in 1872 in Nebraska. This same man named John Johnson was possibly in Tombstone according to the 1880 census, and may have ridden with Wyatt Earp, indicating Turkey Creek Jack Johnson and John Johnson. The marshal are likely one and the same. Jack Johnson is believed to have later spent time in Dodge City, Kansas. Little is known about exactly when he met Wyatt Earp. It could have been during Wyatt's buffalo hunting days in Deadwood or during the time that both were in Dodge City. He is believed to have first ventured into Arizona territory by way of a cattle drive alongside Sherman McMaster, or Curly Bill Brosius, and Pony Deal in late 1878. Brosius and Deal had only recently left the Murphy-Dolan faction, having both taken part in the Lincoln County War opposite Billy the Kid and his Regulators. There is no evidence that Johnson ever took part in the Range War, nor that he knew Brosius or Deal prior to the cattle drive. As a member of the Earp Party, which protected Virgil on the train, Johnson, as John Johnson, was co-indicted in absentia with Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, Warren Earp, and Sherman McMaster in the killing of Frank Stillwell in Tucson, March 20, 1882. Johnson returned with the others to Tombstone on a freight train that night, and the next day, now joined by Texas Jack Vermillion, rode out in the Earp Vendetta Ride of 1882, by which time he was a wanted man in the territory for the killing of Stillwell. After the Earp Vendetta Ride, Johnson escaped through Colorado, then Texas. According to the Flood manuscript, Johnson died of tuberculosis in Salt Lake City, Utah Territory in 1887. Survived there by his widow. The Flood manuscript biography states that Johnson was a member of the Masonic Lodge in Salt Lake City and estimated that his age at death was about 35. This last information has been used to estimate the birth date given above. However, it is heavily suspect, as Flood's information on the death age of Vermillion is very erroneous. Again, he was a member of Mount Moriah Lodge, No. 2, FNAM, Salt Lake City, Utah. It's pretty interesting to me, there have been several websites that report that Wyatt Earp was a brother of the craft. However, I have found zero evidence to this, so I have never really reported on it. You may have heard me speak about this before. Another disappointment is the fact that they also claim Doc Holliday was a Mason. However, it seems to be more plausible that his father was the Mason and he was not. But we'll never know until we find their dues cards, right? So that's it for this week. Please find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. Check out all of our podcast partners, Brother Juan Sepulveda over at The Winding Stairs, of course, Brother Rob Lewis. He's taken a really long break from Far From Centered, but he's focused on Center Mass, which comes out various times during the week. It's live on Google Plus, so check him out. Check us out on the Masonic Roundtable live show Tuesday nights at 9 Central, 10 Eastern. And of course, every week right here on Whence Came You, Sunday nights at 9:30. And syndicated forever. So if you want to listen to episode 1, you can do that whenever you like. And that's because of the support we get. We can pay for those hosting costs. Please also don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons and the Working Tools magazine. Until next week, stay on the level, everybody. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.